International Broadcasting lives on 5085. The Big One, WTWW.
Please stand by as we get ready to launch another episode of this Reality Radio Cafe Cast with your host and my husband, Denny J, K5DCC.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition, liftoff.
Now grab your glass and get ready to fill it up with some radio on the rocks.
Vehicle's pitching downrange.
Good Friday morning, everybody. Come on in. Pull up a chair. Sit down at the table with us. I'm just hanging out waiting for Professor Jim here this morning. The sun is going to be coming up here shortly. You see the golden glow over the horizon. And hopefully it'll warm up quickly. We had another frost last night. Nothing hard. 32 degrees is as low as she went. We are doing a little production work here on the side. We had our club meeting last night for the Northwest Arkansas Amateur Radio Club. And we had a presentation about what if we had an EMP, how to prepare for an EMP or other natural disasters. By Ken Parks, a good friend of ours. Great presentation, Ken. Anyway, I did the recording on my phone, got the video, and I'm now exporting out the whole interview, and then I'll be uploading it to our group on Telegram. I see everyone starting to show up here. Professor Jim has showed up. Good morning, Jim. How are you this morning? Your mic is... there you go.
Good morning.
Oh, you're sounding so rich.
Well, I had to reboot the computer to get the mic to actually function.
I had a feeling that was what was going on. I saw you earlier. I was just saying that we had a great club meeting last night. Great attendance. Some more new members. Two guys took their test and one passed and one failed. They were from the fire department over in the county next to us, and we had a lot of refreshments, and we had a great presentation on a what if we had an EMP. That was very interesting. A lot of conversation, a lot of questions. It kind of sobering stuff. Have you looked into that before?
No. The do the letters again.
EMP.
What's that?
It's a thermonuclear explosion in the atmosphere, usually caused by an enemy, that pretty much takes out all digital communications. You know, yesterday you talked about... You talked about silicon. Well, yeah. This pretty much will take care of any silicon devices, your phones, radios, anything that we use. Now, you think of how much we rely on silicon and all the different... communications devices. I mean, there's chips and everything. If we had an EMP, that would wipe that out. It would be like we don't have any silicon. Kind of a good dovetail off of that one. So he was talking about how to prepare for such a thing. In fact, the U.S. government and the Canadian government have done an extensive research on that. And they said if we had an EMP in the center of the U.S., within 6 months, 90% of the population would be dead.
Wow.
Yeah, they've kind of war gamed this whole thing out, and it was very, very sobering. And of course, we have a few enemies that might like to try that, send a missile overhead, and if it explodes, usually in the air, I mean, it will wipe out anything relying on technology, modern technology. If you have an old car, you'll survive, okay, but new cars have computer chips in them, they won't run. A lot of your devices won't run. The power company, they say that if that happened, would happen, or if we had a solar storm or flare that came, you probably remember the Carrington effect that happened years ago, I think in the 1800s, when they had a...
You're saying I remember something that happened in the 1800s?
No, you've heard of it, I'm sure. Anyway, it fried all of the power transformers, or several power transformers. And of course, we don't have backups. If they go, you know, where are we going to get our power? Where are people going to get to the store? I mean, the stores will be empty and they won't even be open probably. And people will be fighting over each other, over whatever they resources they can get. And it will be total chaos. And then people will be unable to get food, water, whatever, and they'll starve to death and or kill each other. So that's kind of the scenario that the government has come up with in such a situation. So in terms of communications, our presenter was talking about maybe having a backup set of radios, putting them in a Faraday cage, and having something that we could at least communicate simplex to simplex with friends in the community.
Wow.
How's that for a what if this morning?
Well, that's a downer.
Yeah. I'm sure yours is a little more cheerful, huh?
I would hope so.
Daniel's out here this morning. I don't know if he's still in his car or not. I'm going to go ahead and unmute his mic. So, Daniel, when you get to a good spot where you're able to have good audio and good connection, you feel free to jump in and make a comment. But I think you expressed in the chat that you were still on the road. What's the situation there?
Morning, USA. This is Zulu Sierra 5 Delta Golf back in his office. Copy over.
Oh, you sound good. Sound good. Well, good morning. I hope it's not freezing there.
Beautiful day in Africa here. Nice and warm, gentle breeze. The time here is 14:04. We've just come back. We've been mobile since this morning. Went to church service at first, about past 8. Then we went to visit some friends. Then we visit some other friends and some other friends, and we just all came over.
Well, I hope you came in with a box of Dot's goodies. What has she got for us this morning?
Plenty of Easter eggs for Sunday.
What? Hard-boiled eggs? What happened to the pastries?
No, not hard-boiled eggs. Those, you know, those chocolate marshmallow Easter eggs?
Oh, that's much better. Much better. Well, yesterday, my wife, when she was shopping there, Jim, we were talking while she was in that that mart. We had a picture I showed you. She came out with some special sugarless chocolate. And I noticed the warning on it. Don't eat too much of this. It might have a laxative impact.
It must have had erythritol. There's one brand of chocolate that, yeah, I get that has erythritol. By the way, it never affected me. It only affects some people. So don't be afraid to try it.
Oh, I didn't. I tried it. I had several pieces, but no effect on me except tasted as sweet as sugar.
Exactly. And the calories are in the sweetener are not digestible, so it doesn't spike blood sugar.
That is good to know. Hey, we have a new guest with us this morning. Last night at the meeting, I did talk about our Cafe Cast this morning, and several people expressed interest in joining our group this morning. So I'm just going to say good morning to Bob Havenstreit. He's a new ham, and he and his wife were here at the house a couple of weeks ago. He's raising his hand. Bob, say good morning to our gang here. Go ahead and unmute the mic.
There. How about there that?
How about better. That? Welcome. Yeah. Welcome to the Digicom Cafe. Welcome to our morning Cafe Cast. We have Professor Jim W0RLD. He's the professor of the world. And Daniel Giroux is down in South Africa. So, Bob, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into ham radio.
Well, I've been interested in it most all my life. I'll be 74 this month, so, you know, I'm getting old. But finally got, you know, got enough time and energy to get my license. And I don't know. I drove a truck for about 23 and a half years and, you know, did the CB thing and all that, but I never seemed like I could get enough time and energy to study to get my license. So I finally finally got her done. But yeah, it's just nice to be able to join with a like-minded group and have some fellowship with some good people there. So thanks for all your help, and it's good to be with you all. Thank you.
Well, good to have you here this morning, Bob. And go ahead and you can mute your mic again. That way you won't have any background conversation involved in the broadcast today. I'm a little tongue-tied myself. I need more coffee too there, Jim.
So we
got another guy about your age there, Jim. Sorry, wrong one. Go ahead, you're muted. I don't hear you, Jim. Go ahead and there you go.
There I go. How did I? Well, you must have muted.
You didn't
me.
Do it. I did it.
Yes, that's why I didn't
I'm
know
playing
I
games
was
games with you.
I didn't know I was muted because I didn't mute. Yeah. Bob's a youngster. I'll be 76 in 9 days.
Wow. How are you feeling?
I feel like I'm about 40.
Wow. Well, that's excellent. That's probably from all that intermittent fasting, right?
It is. It's partly intermittent fasting, and it's partly I'm very regularly exercising in a variety of ways, hiking, bicycling, kayaking, and exercise bike. And sometimes I do the exercise bike on top of everything else. So, yeah, I feel pretty good. And I also study a martial art called Jodo, which is very fun.
Cool. Well, I forgot to get Bob's call sign. Bob, what is your call sign again?
Okay, it's KI5OHZ. Z is in Zulu.
Have you come up with any creative phonetics for that? Like my wife's call is KF5KLS. Keep life simple is what she says, and she does that by not talking on the radio.
Done that yet? I'll have to figure out something.
What was
okay?
What were the last letters again, Bob?
Okay, it's KI5O. That's Oscar Hotel Zulu.
OHZ.
Yes, sir.
Jim's got the wheels turning. He's going to come up with something for you. I can tell.
Oh, yeah. I'll think about it. OHZ.
All right.
Jim doesn't need any phonetics because his whole call sign just speaks of what he's about. He's out there teaching the world every morning in our cafe cast.
Yep.
Jim is a retired professor, so we're kind of bringing him out of retirement.
Well, the only reason I'm doing this with you, honestly, is I miss a captive audience.
Yeah, and he's got one here. Me.
Well, it's small, but at least it's an audience.
Well, it's growing though. The Cafe Cast is growing. I'm seeing a lot of interest in what we're doing here.
What's that under your name, Jim? Says I'm a retired motorcycle. And then it's dot dot dot.
Yeah, I don't know why. I guess I'm a retired motorcycle riding academic dean. I was dean of the IU Indiana University School of Journalism at the Indianapolis campus.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I went to college in Florida, University of Florida, graduated in 70, I think it was. I can remember back that far. But I never really used my engineering degree. I went to Hawaii. My friend had a gift shop business in Hawaii, and Plus, he was a missionary in the Philippines, so we worked back and forth to the Philippines, setting up churches, preaching the gospel, and working in the gift shop business to support it till about 1984 when I moved to Arkansas.
Best move you ever made, right?
Yep. Could write a book, I guess, if I was a writer, but I guess we all could. Yeah. We could all write a book, I guess.
Yeah. What did you think of Ken's presentation last night?
Yeah, it was good. I've been thinking about those things for a long time. One guy said it was a bunch of BS, but you know what? Just about 1 second of something like that happening, and it won't be BS anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's why I brought up the experience I had here before we got here. That ice storm that was so devastating left people without power in the winter for 3 weeks, and people couldn't even get out of their location. You know, if they were deep in the woods like Ken was, or other friends we know, all, you know, tree branches are broken down over power lines, and it was a mess. They had to get out chainsaws and cutting for days to clear a way out. And in the meantime, they didn't have the conveniences they were used to. And so, yeah, what if we had some natural disaster like that? And that's why we moved down here. We want to be prepared.
Yeah. Sure doesn't hurt to be prepared. Something happened and it'll be too late to prepare. Well, like the Bible says, the 10 virgins, you know, 5 wise and 5 foolish. I think it's, you know, when something's going to happen, it's going to happen fast. And I think it's better to be ready, you know.
So how are you preparing yourself there in Bergman, Arkansas?
Well, we have a little food. I need to do a lot more, but, you know, I didn't mention last night. It may sound kind of funny, but we've got an above-ground pool with 5,000 gallons of water in it. You know, I just kind of keep it all year long, so it catches the rain. And, you know, if something did happen, we've got 5,000 gallons out there to flush toilets or probably boil it.
Yeah.
Use it for, you know, whatever.
Do you have yours with chlorine and bromine or whatever in it too?
Yeah, I use a little, that shock it, you know, once in a while to keep the algae and that down. But, you know, we could use it for different things if we had to.
Yeah, very good. Well, we do a lot of what ifs here. Now we're starting this new segment, so to speak. And I'll tell you what, since it came to my mind here a couple of days ago and I shared it with Jim, Jim is a very creative thinker and a good writer and good communicator. And so I turned this part of it over to him. But, man, my mind is just flooded with what-if questions. And last night's meeting, that was a great what-if question. And we had a lot of conversation around it. So, Jim, what is the what-if question of the day today?
Well, the what-if question of today, and we've been recently talking about what if various things did not exist. And I'm going to try to broaden that a little bit and maybe even consider the converse of that. What if something did exist? But I'm going to tie this to a news item. Yesterday, Miguel Cabrera of the Detroit baseball team was playing the Cleveland Indians, and Miguel hit a home run, but he couldn't see where the ball went because of the snow. So he slid into second, and then the ump at the second base umpire informed him that he'd actually hit a home run, and so he got up and went on in and finished the home run. So that got me to thinking, what if sports did not exist? It was completely gone from our lives. Or the other side of that question, what if every child had an opportunity to participate in sports? So that's the what if. What if we didn't have sports, or what if every child had the opportunity to participate in sport.
Anybody want to pick that one up? Daniel, are you involved in sports down there in South Africa? What's the favorite sport of the area?
Well, my favorite sport that I've ever played was tennis. And I love watching Formula One Grand Prix, but I'm not very much of a sports person, so I can't really comment on it.
I'm kind of the same. I really don't watch sports much. The only sport I've really been involved in would be like probably tennis or racquetball. We did a lot of that. Oh, we did some volleyball. That's like volleyball in a racquetball court. That's a lot of fun. But as far as watching sports, I don't watch a lot. Once in a while, we'll watch a football game. Jim, are you a big sports fan?
I would say I'm somewhat of a sports fan. I don't follow any particular team. Well, maybe I follow the Indianapolis Colts a bit, but not enough to buy a season ticket.
There you go.
That's serious money.
Yeah.
I could get a really nice ham radio for a price.
You could. How about you, Bob? Are you a sports fan?
No, not really. There's too many other serious things to be thinking about, you know, and I don't know. It seems like there's so much commercialization and there's so much money involved in it anymore. I just don't listen to it anymore.
Yeah, you're right there. There is a tremendous amount of money and side businesses that are spawned off of that. I hate to think of how much money some people make, and the players, my goodness, the money they make. But I guess they kind of pay a price for it, you know, especially football players. Sounds like they suffer the rest of their lives once they retire.
Especially
I don't know, Jim.
Especially football players. Yeah. So I was in high school. I was the photographer for the first 3 years. I made pictures of other people playing sports. And my dad got a different position at a different university. We moved 50 miles away from the town we lived in. And I went to a university high school, which was right on campus at SIU Carbondale. And there was only 40 in my high school graduating class. And I began to crank through the numbers. You know, there's, 40 in my class. There's probably only about 160 in the entire high school. Half of those would be girls. So there's a pool of about 80 boys. And some of those boys wouldn't be interested in sports. And I thought, well, maybe I have a chance to get a letter in something. So my senior year was the first year I went out for sports. And the first opportunity was wrestling. And we were a really small high school, and we did not actually have anybody in the heavyweight class. There was nobody that big. And so I made the team. I wrestled off another guy to make the team. And since I had no experience, didn't know what I was doing, the coach put me in the heavyweight slot. And at the end of the season, I weighed 157 pounds, but I was wrestling heavyweight. And I never had an opponent that didn't outweigh me by 90 pounds. And my first match, a guy took me down, landed on top of me, knocked the wind out of me, and I actually thought I was going to die right there. I couldn't breathe. And so as the season went on, my goal was not to ever win a match. I thought that was not practical, but my goal was to see if I could last longer and longer and longer before I was pinned. And in wrestling, you have to keep one shoulder off the mat to keep from being pinned. So I would do all these neck bridges and isometric exercises on my neck because I reasoned if I could keep have a really, really strong neck, I could keep one shoulder off the mat. And I actually graphed this. I did a piece of graph paper. And the x-axis was time across the season. And the y-axis was number of minutes before I was pinned. And I was graphically trying to extend the number of minutes before I was pinned. And this was actually working. And I did win a third place medal in a four-way meet. I was so proud of that medal. And the reason I actually won that third place medal in a four school meet is that one of the heavyweight wrestlers was sick and didn't compete. At any rate, the district that we were in included East St. Louis and Belleville, and Southern Illinois is a coal mining area, and I referred to those boys that came from that area as the Eastern European coal mining gene pool. In other words, they weighed 250 pounds, had no neck, and were all muscle. And I'm going up against these guys. And in fact, the guy that was seated first in the district was my first opponent, because obviously I was seated last, having never actually won a match. And there was a collegiate wrestler in the audience who was kind of my idol. And he's actually in the Distinguished Wrestling Hall of Fame now. And he was watching my match. And believe it or not, this guy who was seated first in the district, it took him 5 minutes and 4 seconds to pin me. And I would say 5 minutes of that 5 minutes and 4 seconds, he had me in a pinning position, but my strong neck kept me from being pinned. And he couldn't believe it. He just wore himself out trying to pin this skinny little guy.
Oh my.
And anyway, my heavyweight wrestling idol, he wrestled college at the time. He came down after the match, and I'm thinking he's going to congratulate my opponent. And he comes up to me and shakes my hand. I'm kind of stunned because I had gone to see him wrestle. He was my idol because he was in my weight class, right? Of course, he'd competed internationally and competed in the Olympics and so forth. He was an actually really good wrestler. He comes up to me and shakes my hand and says, I just want you to know that's the greatest effort I've ever seen in wrestling.
You get an E for effort.
And I'll tell you, I have never forgotten that. Never forgotten that. That was such an encouragement for all that I had tried to do. I knew I'd never win anything, right? But I never gave up. I always kept trying and tried to improve. In my case, just tried to improve the time before I was pinned. And I've carried that lesson through my life, and I've often gone out of my way to encourage a younger person who's struggling, because that comment made so much to me. And years later, decades later, I tracked him down and called him up on the phone and told him that.
Wow. Well, what I take from that is, what if there are no sports? Then we wouldn't, Jim would not be such a stiff-necked, determined individual. let me ping-pong over one thing you said in the beginning that this kind of came to my mind as I'm listening. You talked about being a sports photographer in school. I remember the day when it was so exciting to set your camera at a real fast shutter speed and capture just that perfect moment when the football player is in the air, the ball is almost in his hand. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, I do.
Those are important days for photographers. And of course, things have changed. And now it's pretty easy to shoot a 4K video and just freeze frame any point in the process of filming and make that your super capture and front page photo in a newspaper or whatever. So if there were no sports, what would photographers do? They would be robbed of that thrill of capturing that supreme moment in a football game or something. I bet you probably have some classic photos that you're so proud of that you captured with a regular SLR at just the right time, catching that moment, don't you?
Well, not very many, because I didn't have an opportunity. I did shoot sports. I shot University of Minnesota sports when I was there. I shot Indiana University sports when I was studying there. So I do have some, but I never classified myself as a really, really good sports photographer. Now, back in the day when I was doing that with regular cameras, you know, the first Nikon motor drive, for example, I think was 3 frames a second. And the current cameras that sports photographers use are 20 frames a second. So they don't have to shoot video. Video is 30 frames a second, but 20 frames a second is plenty fast enough. And we're talking about really high megapixel pictures at 20 frames a second, right? Because there's a big buffer in the cameras that you can rip off 10 or 12 seconds of shooting 20 frames a second. And it just stores it in a buffer in the camera. And so I did have an experience some years back, probably 15 years ago. I was invited to judge the professional journalism photography competition in Ohio. And Matt Dietrich, then with the Indianapolis Star, and Smiley Poole at the Dallas paper were co-judges. And the way these professional contests run, it's really quite rapid. And all the entries are projected at about a second each. And so you're looking at a picture and you have to instantly respond to it. And if two judges say out, it's marked with a different color. And the next round, that picture is not shown. If two judges out of three say in, then it's kept for the next round. And you just go through successive rounds until you get it pared down and can select the first, second, and third. So the professor, me, had very, very good agreement in all the categories of the competition until we got to sports. And I'm saying, you know, here comes a picture. I'm saying in, the other two judges are saying out. Next picture shown, I'm saying in, the other two judges saying out. And after about a dozen of those, I stopped. I said, wait a minute, I need some education here. These are some of the best sports pictures I've ever seen in my life. Why are you guys saying out? And Matt Dietrich of the Indianapolis Star looked at me and said, Jim, with the equipment we use today, these are very, very easy to capture with the autofocus that's available now. Of course, in the old days, autofocus didn't even exist. But now with the high frame weight professional cameras and extremely intelligent autofocus, these dramatic sports photos are actually pretty easy to capture with an experienced photographer. So the picture that actually won was a storytelling picture, actually. A photographer, there were two games being played, and the photographer was supposed to cover the second game, but he arrived a little bit early, and he was sitting in the stands so that his viewpoint was along the first base line. So he could look across first place, home plate down to first base. And somebody hit a home run that won the game. apparently the first game that he was not to cover, but he was sitting there and had his camera in his hand. And the entire team of the person that hit the home run pounced on him after they were so excited. They just formed a human pile of players on top of the guy that hit the home run right at the home plate. The catcher is a few feet behind them, looking down into the dirt with total dejection. So that was the picture that got first place. It was not an actual action picture. It was a storytelling picture. So I got a real education from these guys.
Very good. Well, you know, some people say that amateur radio is a sport, in particular satellite operating. It's fast. You have to be prepared to jump in at the right moment with your call sign and grid square information and make that contact in a matter of seconds. And I've had many people refer to that as a sport, or maybe working DX. Have you ever worked a DX pileup? I'll bet you Bob has not had that experience yet. I think you're just a tech. But HF work, DX work, can be very challenging when you get hundreds of people trying to work someone in a rare country where there aren't very many hams, and he's got a weak signal, and everybody's piling on top of each other. It takes some skill to figure out, well, maybe if I go off a couple kilohertz, you know, and stand out, or maybe I get a better microphone, like a Samsung. Samsung. Put a little compression on it. Or maybe you're doing CW. You know, you got to fly in there real quick and get your call sign out and hopefully work someone. So in many ways, amateur radio can be considered a sport. Now, imagine that. What would life be like without ham radio?
Well, it would be duller, certainly.
Yeah. How about you, Daniel? You seem very steeped in ham radio. Can you imagine your life without it?
Oh, definitely. It's I tell you, since I've got past my license in 98, I've been having a ball. So I dread to know what ham radio would be and out of my life right now, than ever.
Yeah, I'll bet you're involved in it in one fashion or another every single day, aren't you?
Well, every day I normally go on HF on 40 meters on 7010, and I give a call out CQDX on CW. CW is one of my means that I like. And otherwise, I'm active on VHF. Our club, the Durban Amateur Radio Club, has got our own 145 decimal 650 repeater. And so I'm quite active. That's always on in the background for me there, Daniela.
Have you ever been involved in a DX pileup? I mean, with hundreds of people calling you? Because you're kind of rare.
Only time I have been involved in the DX pileup is when I was operating our club station. We had a field day station one day. And every year we have in August with all the International Lighthouse Weekend, Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend, that's the only time. But my own home station, no, been involved in the pileup ever.
Yeah. How about you, Jim? Well, of course, Jim's not been involved in HF until he met me. And now his life is spiraling out of control.
Well, the wallet's spiraling out of control, that's for sure.
Oh, come on. Mello just came in the house. Pull up a chair, Mello. Good morning. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Denny. Good morning, everyone. Figured I'd jump into the fray this morning and join everyone. Say good morning. Hope everyone is having a blessed morning so far.
Jim, why don't you give him the what-if question of the day?
The what-if question of the day is, what if sports did not exist? How would our lives be changed? Or the opposite of that, what if every kid had the ability to participate in one sport or another, and not just the big, strong kids?
Okay. Well, let's see. What if they didn't exist? Probably would not change a thing in my life because I don't watch sports. So that would take care of that. And if every child could participate, there'd be a lot of broke parents from all the equipment we'd have to buy. We'd have no time for anything else in life other than driving our children to back and forth to sporting events, considering I raised six. That would be my life if what if.
But Mello, you seem so athletic. I bet you were involved in some sports in high school, weren't you?
I wanted to play football growing up, but I have scoliosis, which I discovered as a teenager. And the doctor said, no, you get hit the wrong way, you're going to be out for good. So I stayed away from that. I did play baseball growing up. And I found that because of my back, I had issues with swinging the bat or throwing the ball too hard. And I didn't know why. Later on, discovered what the issue was. So I ended up running track. I ran track in high school, did the triple jump, quarter mile relay, and shot put. And actually had the number one triple jump in the state, but then decided not to go to state meets because I was trying to be a responsible teen and ended up going to work my senior year because I knew I was going into the military. So I passed that up. But that's pretty much the extent of my sporting career. People would ask me if I played basketball back then because I was tall and apparently brown skinned. So no, I hate basketball. I was never good at it. And that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
My sport was gymnastics. I was a trampolinist and I was on parallel bars and a little bit of free X and whatever. But anyway, it was hard for me too, because I was a growing young lad. I grew 8 inches in one summer and my shin splints were killing me. And from being on the trampoline, I ended up getting the famous growing disease, Osgood Slottish, in my knee, in my top or just below my knee. So the doctor said, you got to quit doing that. Your bones are too soft. You're too young for that. And if you don't, you'll be in a cast for 6 months. And I, too, had scoliosis. My back was kind of an S almost, which created other issues. And I had a great chiropractor. He was actually the president of the Minnesota Chiropractic Association at the time. And over a period of a year, he straightened me right out. So no problems now. What sports were you involved in there, Bob?
Well, believe it or not, I played football in junior high and high school. I was a pretty small guy. I just thought I'd be the tough guy, I guess, you know, and ended up breaking my wrist. I think it was a senior year. Guy just mashed me into the ground, and I broke my bone was sticking out of the side of my side of my arm. It's kind of a funny story. I went over to the coach. I said, man, I think my arm's hurting pretty bad. And he looked down, saw my bone sticking out of my wrist there. And my car at that time was a 1950 Ford, you know, with a 3-speed on the column, you know, no power steering or any of that. And he's signed the we had a health guy there, you know, that on the sidelines, you know, the guy that taped everybody up and everything. He was just a schoolmate with me, and he said, Dennis Fleming, I think was his name. He said, Dennis, you go with him to get him over to the hospital there. So I had to drive my old 50 Ford over there with one arm trying to shift the 3-speed on the column. Oh, good grief. My hand hanging off the end of my arm. You know? Anyway, I got her over there and got all casted up and all that. But, yeah, I played some football. I got beat up pretty bad. Both my knees had water on both my knees and not banged up. But, yeah, that was my football career.
How much did you weigh? How much did you weigh, Bob?
I'd say 140, around in that area, 35, 40. Only 5'6", you know. I was a little guy, you know, but I don't know. I got out there and busted heads with them, you know, did all that stuff.
Wow. I can see you doing the parade wave with your broken hand, just flopping. Yeah. Back and
forth. Well, actually, I was in the high school band too, so I did a lot of band stuff after that. You know, that was my end of my football career there, I think.
What'd you play in the band?
Drums. I was a drummer. I could still play the drums there.
My kids both participated in band all the way through college. So one played tuba and the other played clarinet.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun in the band, you know, going the trips with the football team and stuff too, you know, or different places. And it was fun. I think I would have been better off just to spend all my time in the band, probably.
I played saxophone in the band.
And stayed off that football field, you know. Yeah. A little too small for that sport.
Mello, I just want you to meet our friend here, Bob Havenstreit. He's a new ham. He got his license here a month or so ago, and he's a member of our club. He was at our meeting last night, and he was here at the house when we had our antenna building party. By the way, I need to get that posted, don't I, Bob? Get the information on what you need, or did you already get a sheet? Yeah, you got a sheet when you were here. You need to accumulate those parts.
I had to get down and get the parts and get that thing built.
Yeah. We'll have get-together here this month. Well, this has been very interesting.
Nope, sorry, Denny. Oh, I was just saying no pleasure problem. To meet Bob. And
meeting you there.
Congratulations on the ticket, and welcome to the hobby. That's awesome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Another new person in our mighty network. I think you already welcomed her. Her name is Pat. She is 80 years old. She was at the meeting last night. Tech licensed ham. Moved out here from Delaware. She's living alone, and she's a prepper and just doing all kinds of unbelievable things here in the county, preparing herself, and has some wisdom, a lot of experience now, but not a thing wrong with her. She is going at 80 years old. So it was good to see her join the network platform and the Digicom Cafe. And she's also got this app on her phone. So we may see her here sometime soon too. So meeting a lot of new people in our club. We had a good meeting last night, didn't we, Bob?
Yeah, it was real good there. I really, really enjoyed it there. It's nice meeting the people. I've been listening to the repeater, you know, and stuff, and nice to meet them face to face, you know.
Yeah. By the way, Mello is our official cafe pastor, and Mello lives out in Massachusetts at the moment, but he's moving to the Carolinas. His wife's waiting for him. He's finishing it out his job there, and I want Mello to tell you about his call sign. Speaking of phonetics, Mello, go ahead and tell your story.
Yeah, K1BAD, which kind of an oxymoron, considering it stands for Kilo One, Born Again Delivered, Born Again Christian, and in the ministry, and just enjoying having the opportunity to kind of intermingle my faith with the hobby. And Denny, by the way, you are part of my devotional this morning. Your what if question made my devotional, so I'll be posting that a little later on. And so I enjoy just having the opportunity to write Devo every day and put it out there on different platforms. Facebook, I have a blog on blogger.com, and then on the Mighty Networks platform, as well as sharing some of the audio devos that I've recorded in the past on The Refuge, which is another channel here, another group here on Telegram.
And I'd like to pull in what we've been talking about before you came here. We were in answering Jim's what if question here. I saw it as a lot of photographers would be very disappointed if there was no sports, because I remember when I was young and we didn't have all the modern technology today, it was really fun to try and capture action shots with high-speed SLR cameras in that mode, and to capture that one moment where, you know, like the football player is launched in the air, he's reaching for the football, the football is just inches away from his hand, you know, and get that beautiful clear shot of that. Of course, nowadays it's easy to do it. And it also makes me think of what this day represents in this weekend. Each year, people drop what they're doing and they focus on a life-changing, world-changing event. And that was the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And so we relive that. There's movies made about it. Many, many books are written about it. And so kind of taking off of Jim's what-if question, the question I posed in The Refuge, which is Mello's channel, that's kind of the faith table here in the cafe. I posed the question, what if Jesus had never died? How would the world change? How would it be different? And whether a person here is a person of faith or not, we are all living in the reality of what that event meant in history and how it's changed the world and changed the culture. And in a lot of ways, it may not be for the good, too, because a lot of people, wars have been fought over it. People have died over it, which is very sad. And I don't think Jesus looks down at this situation the world is in today and feels really good about it. So, but within it all, there are many, many sincere, believing people that their lives have been dramatically changed as a result of what Jesus has done. So in this episode, we are definitely bringing in the faith aspect of it. And I know that Daniel's been sharing a lot of things in his channel, and so has Mello, memes and scripture and all kinds of things. But what does this day mean to you, Daniel?
Just a comment, Danny. You've actually just asked my what if question I was going to ask yesterday. What if Jesus never died on the cross? I'll be still lost a sinner, huh?
Yeah. How about you, Mello? What would what would your world be like without this event?
Pretty much the response that I gave you would be really a life with no hope. I think back at all the times that I came pretty close to not having a life because of the things that I was doing and even because of the career that I chose. And I say that the Lord pretty much chose my career because I never growing up never wanted to have anything to do with being in law enforcement, and actually took the test for the fun of it. I always tell people I took the test for the fun of it. Most people, you know, you hear stories. I've always wanted to be in law enforcement, et cetera, et cetera. And I've never had a desire. I took the test for the fun of it because I had friends who had taken the test and been waiting years to get on. And lo and behold, within 6 months, I was going through the process and I figured, well, you know what? I'll go for the fun of it. Yeah. 20 years later, I was retiring for the fun of it. So I think it's a career that the Lord chose for me. And it was during my career that I came to know him, pretty much hit rock bottom. And I'll tell you, if it was not for the Lord, it'd be a hopeless life. And knowing what I know now, an eternity of condemnation that I was not aware of before I came to know him. So I do praise God. This is definitely the foundation of our faith this weekend that we celebrate.
Well, I know for me, it would mean this hobby would not be as rich as it is, because it is the lens through which I view the world these days. And I know my life would be in ruins had it not been for what Christ did on the cross and the fact that he rose again and he is alive and living in me. And I'm not always the best representation of him and his kingdom and his message, but I can tell you that his life has changed my life. And my marriage is, you know, like nothing I would ever be able to experience. We have this unity in Christ too. And so as we look at this snapshot event in time this weekend and appreciate and are thankful for what Christ has done, what God has done through him for us because of his love, we just always remember what it could be if we did not have it, if it didn't exist. And of course, in that light, sports means nothing. It holds no value at all to me, but it was a great question, Jim. And of course, I love springing off your thoughtful questions and things each day. And we're getting close to the end here, and I'm still rendering this talk that we had last night. It's going to be a large file. It might take a while to upload it to our Telegram group. But I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Welcome to the group here, Bob. I hope you come back often. And you all have a wonderful Easter weekend. Of course, we'll be here tomorrow morning, too. Professor Jim will have another thoughtful question. And I think it's going to be a wonderful day here. Jim, any closing comments from you?
Oh, it's the comments have been very inspirational. Welcome. Bob, I hope you come back. Good to see everybody again. And I have no articulate comments to add because Denny summed up the weekend admirably.
Ah, you're too kind. And for those listeners out there that are listening to the Cafe Cast, we want to welcome you and invite you to join us in our conversations by just going to my call sign, k5dcc.com. That will get you here in our Telegram voice chat group. And we'd love to have you tell your story, introduce you, and have you participate in our conversation. We have a Facebook alternative website, digicomcafe.com, where you can post comments, articles, share links to videos, or anything categorized by whatever your interest is. So we use this cafe paradigm. It really works well for us. When you come into a cafe, there are multiple tables. The buffet has multiple kinds of foods. And so we just say, come on in, pick what you want and leave the rest and enjoy the fellowship here in our worldwide community of amateur radio operators. And not everybody here is a ham. We have several in our group that are studying to take the test and just enjoying the fellowship and learning from those of us that are amateur radio operators. It is one of our passions. And of course, with that, as we've talked about recently, we all have motivational gifts. The reason I have Professor Jim here as a co-host is because his motivational gift is teaching, and he's got a lot of knowledge and experience and a great way of communicating, a very sensitive and sincere personality, very caring. I just really love you, Jim, and thank you for being here every morning. And by the way, we are probably going to start a video cafe cast Monday. Our good friend Andre from Romania, who's very talented and very intelligent regarding technology, has suggested this, and he's going to do his part to help make this happen. At least once a week, we'll be doing our live cafe cast here in Telegram and live streaming it and making a video podcast of it, too. So stand by for that. Great things are happening here. We're just having a ball, making ham radio fun again. God bless you all. Have a great Easter weekend. It's been great to have you here. 73.
73.
73 from South Africa.
73.
73.
Hi, this is Extra Class Amateur Radio Operator, K5DCC. I just upgraded to my Extra Class last year. You know how I did it? I used Hamtest Online. Did you know that Hamtest Online is the top-rated study program on eham.net? 97% of reviewers gave them 5 stars. They have more 5-star user reviews than all other study methods combined, and success is guaranteed. If you fail the amateur radio license exam, they will refund your subscription. It's a no-brainer. You pass the exam or get a full refund. Try it for yourself at hamtestonline.com.
Hello, Cafeers. Denny J here in the beautiful Ozarks of Northwest Arkansas, out in the country, 25 miles from any large city. Out here in the country, we struggle to get good internet. Maybe you have the same problem. If you live in a rural area, you don't have many options. It's either satellite or DSL or cellular. And believe me, we've tried them all. Just recently, I was more than happy to pay the penalty to get out of our satellite service. Latency was horrible, and for amateur radio communications, the delays were up to 5 seconds, and you probably experienced what that's like. Our DSL service was also very unreliable. We rarely got the speeds that we were promised, and it kept dropping out. But now I think I found a service that we're going to love. It's called Visible.com. It's a company that's owned by Verizon, and kind of a pared-back service. but works beautifully for my situation here out in the country on 15 acres. Visible.com offers only one plan. It's unlimited everything. Unlimited calls, text, and internet at slightly slower speeds than their top drawer plan at Verizon. But it does use the Verizon network. Go to visible.com and use my referral code 3NOVEMBER37NOVEMBERTANGO. Also, to get your $40 a month bill reduced to $25, you need to be part of a party pay group. You can join me in our Digicom Cafe party. You will find the link to these things down in the show notes here, along with links to our Digicom Cafe community portal, which is a Facebook alternative. Also our Telegram community, where we have text and voice chat, and also our live cafe cast here in the Digicom Cafe. So get your line at visible.com. And again, use my referral code and join our party to get that bill down to $25 a month.
Thank you for listening to this Radio on the Rocks Cafe cast. We invite you to join our Mighty Networks amateur radio community at members.digicomcafe.com.